You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Now, it was way back on March 7th that your Columbus Crew went to Seattle and played the second game of the season. And we were beginning to wonder if this was such a great idea to go to what turned out to be the city hit earliest and very hard by COVID. And I remember that there was a lot of people at the game, not as many as they normally get, certainly. There were a lot of people there. And I remember just kind of freaking out about that a little bit. That game was back on March 7th, so that would have been 9 months ago. And here we are. We've come full circle. And this Saturday night at 8 o'clock, right here in Columbus at Mapfre Stadium, those same Seattle Sounders have qualified for MLS Cup, and they will come here and play your Columbus Crew for all of it. And it just seems, at least to me, that it's kind of a fitting capper on what has been a strange ride, a strange season. And, you know, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, as the cliche goes. So let's have at it. It's going to be fun. A lot of people are like, oh, no, we have to play Seattle. Bring them on. That's what I say. Ari, Bart, Alex, bring them on, right? I'm going to bring you guys on. Nobody's afraid of these guys, are they? I'm not.
I mean, I think it goes to, you know, what Caleb Porter's been talking about. We touched on it's about peaking at the right time. And right now, Columbus is peaking at the right time. I mean, especially what this team has looked like since that loss in Orlando. But even, you know, over the October month, this team's been playing better and better. Guys are healthy now. And, I mean, you know, yes, the win against New England just 1-0, and we'll break that down a little bit more. But I thought that was as convincing of a 1-0 win for Columbus in an Eastern Conference final at that against the hottest team in MLS, right. You know, coming in. I think that bodes well. You know, obviously Seattle, they've got the firepower. Fortunately, they're not going to bring their obnoxious fans and, you know, capos with them. But I'm not too concerned about this team. I mean, I'm concerned, but you're going to play. You've got to beat the best teams, and Caleb Porter's got this team ready.
All right. Well, I know Alex is concerned about the third team on the field that will join us on Saturday night at Mapfre Stadium. Alex, you got to hold your water for a little bit. We'll get to the referee crew assigned to this game, because I don't know if it's a troll or just they draw them out of a hat or what, but the irony here is just thick and eyebrows are raised, but we'll get to that here in a few minutes. Ari, to Bart's point, and I agree, oftentimes in this game, we talked about this, the score is not indicative of what happens. If you watch that entire match, the Crew executed their game plan to cold-blooded precision.
For sure.
New England had no passing lanes the entire game. They couldn't possess the ball. They couldn't figure out how to break us down. It seems like every pass they made, Josh Williams was intercepting it.
Essentially.
He had the best game that he's ever had in the black and gold, in my opinion. Agree, disagree.
I agree. I think he was the Crew's best player from minute one to minute 90 in that Eastern Conference final. He was literally intercepting everything in sight. When they were defending on the end where the media can see the best, I just was watching him. And every time New England was trying to get a pass into the box, Williams was there to intercept. And Mensah intercepted a lot of passes too. Obviously, the early scare in the game was when Mensah tried to clear it out of midair, and he kind of slipped and fell, allowing Buxa to run at that near post, and then he just decided to launch it right at Tarbell's face at that near post, and it hit the post, and that was New England's best chance of the game. But it's another perfect example in a home match, especially, where Columbus has controlled the possession of the game, the chances of the game, and the scoreline doesn't do the performance justice, like you said, Brian, because it was only 1-0. If Columbus is able to finish more of their chances, and looking back at some of the games they've played this season, and looking back at the way Caleb Porter talks about the games after they happen, There are so many instances where you could say the Crew could have won matches 3-4-0 on many occasions if they just had, you know, some clinical finishing or some luck go their way. I mean, one chance that comes to mind in particular from this Eastern Conference final, the third in club history, was the Lucas Zelarayán turn.
Yeah.
That was from 25 yards out and clanged off the bar. That would have been the goal of the weekend in world football. It was akin to Heung-min Son's goal that he scored against Arsenal in the North London Derby just a few hours before that match kicked off. And that turn and that shot would have been incredible. But, you know, the finish from Artur was great. You know, the key thing in that goal for me was the resiliency to continue pushing after failure on the corner kick. Within the first 10 minutes, they had like five corners. Yeah. And every single one, they didn't get a chance on them, which is something they've done all season long.
Yeah.
It's the only area where they haven't really excelled, set pieces, defending and scoring them. But, you know, the resiliency to continue. Mensah, really good composure on that pass. And he put it in the perfect spot for Artur. And Artur just passed it in. That's how he likes to score goals. He just likes to pass it into the best spot. He got right past the fingertips of Matt Turner, who Caleb Porter said was the man of the match in general. He stood on his head.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal this season. But Columbus Crew is going to MLS Cup final, and it's crazy to think, you know, that 9-10 months ago, you know, when we were doing podcasts in person before, and I remember talking about the Seattle game and getting ready for RSL, and then all of a sudden the world stopped. So it was a different world when Columbus and Seattle played. But These were the first two teams in Major League Soccer that were directly affected by COVID-19 because an employee at Lumen Field in Seattle had coronavirus because Seattle was one of the first places to be infected by the virus back in early March. Mm-hmm. And there was monitoring of COVID before COVID. So these teams have dealt with it the longest. They've played one game in 2020 without having to think about the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. That is true. And Alex, I just get a feeling about you that you get most excited when you see either Josh Williams or Jonathan Mensah in the attacking box, in the opposing team's box. And we saw it in the first half with Josh Williams carrying the ball. And then like, okay, nobody's going to step to me. I'm just going to keep going. Turned out to be an offsides play in the end, but you had to be excited.
I felt like I was watching some sort of 1990s World Cup or something, and like Franco Baresi was back on the field and was just, you know, dribbling dudes in the opposing half. It was cool. I mean, these guys are playing with a little bit of swagger. I mean, I feel like they are starting to kind of hit that gear where they need to be. And, you know, it's the right time for stuff like that. And it showed the confidence that a guy like Williams has, where he feels like, you know what, we can go three at the back for a few minutes. I'm going to dribble these guys. I'm going to dribble these fools and make them look like idiots. You know, this is a center back, you know, not even, you know, a world-class center back, you know, just one of these like working guys who's, you know, been in and out of the starting 11, depending on, you know, who's fit. And he's just going at that defense. So I love to see that. It speaks a lot more about the team's mentality than it does anything else. And, you know, I'm super, super excited about, kind of the not only the result, but this upcoming match. I feel like it's going to be a really entertaining game, and can't wait to see what the team brings to the match.
Do you think Josh Williams ever gets that chance under Greg Berhalter? Do you think he permits that?
No.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Bart. That is a good point. And then on the winning goal, all of a sudden Mensah's there, and I wasn't at the stadium, so I didn't see the buildup. It was just like, oh, what's he doing there? And exactly. I'll tell you, 9 guys out of 10 would have just shot that ball, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was right there.
Right. Oh. And I think the reason why Mensah was still there is because it was so quickly after the corner. So
right.
Instead of Mensah deciding to, I'm just going to haul ass back on defense in case of a counter.
And you do see him do that.
Yeah.
He'll just kind of linger. I remember that in the first half as well. He just kind of hung around for a while to see what was doing. And that's what happens. But I think my attention maybe just wavered just for a moment. And it's like, oh, what's he doing there?
And I remember the two passes before Mensah touched the ball in the buildup. Basically, like, the ball was just floating in the air. And I think Afful was standing about in the center of 25, 28 yards out. He just kind of hit it in a really awkward way, but it got to Pedro on the left side, who gave it to Zelarayán. Zelarayán had a great ball to the back stick, and Mensah was just there. He one-time passed that. He didn't even trap it.
No.
That was one time pass.
It was a deft touch. That's really hard to do.
Yes.
You know, especially for a central defender who's not used, they're used to just trying to pound that ball, and he hit it like a golf chip, and it was right at the pin. Oh, yeah. And all Artur had to do was redirect it.
He's quietly getting himself. I don't want to jinx anything, obviously, but I mean, if this team is successful either this year or one of these, you know, next few years, while Mensah is still in this team, like, he is quietly getting himself into the circle of honor conversation with the kind of performances that he's put in this season and in recent years.
And big time stage too.
He is just totally solid. I mean, you have a lot of these guys who are flashy, you know, everybody knows what Jossie Zardes contributes, because when he contributes, it's, you know, these big moments, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody knows what Lucas contributes, because again, these kind of big moments that have the crowd on their feet cheering. Mensah doesn't always get the cheers, doesn't always get that kind of big moment, but he has thousands of little moments every game. And this was a bigger moment than most, but, you know, he's just such a big contribution to this team and a big reason that we are going to be playing an MLS Cup next weekend. I just can't say enough about him.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Bart, I go back, not to bring up one of his darkest moments, but I really feel that we've seen this great story arc with Jonathan. If you remember the Montreal game of 1 or 2 years ago, where he just made a horrible mistake that led to us losing the game. And I joined a lot of supporters in like, I don't know about this guy. And it really, ever since then, it was like that was the seed that was planted in the ground. And now he's just flourished into this player that we absolutely cannot live without. If for some reason he couldn't play on Saturday, and I don't see that happening, but, I mean, we would lose. That's how important he is, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously that first season and under Greg Berhalter and what Greg Berhalter asked and expected of center backs, you know, you're getting used to a new league, but also you're playing all those balls, you know, out from the back, everything. You're keeping that possession. But I think that was – honestly, I think those growing pains were good for him, not just, you know, in building that sort of steel and that mentality. But also, I mean, look at him. He is one of the most accurate and reliable passers for this team and demonstrated perfectly with the poise that he displayed on that goal and on that setup. And I also want to give credit, don't want to overlook Artur, who again has as many goals in the playoffs as he has in the regular season in his Columbus Crew career. Uh-huh. And another, you know, another one where it would be easy in that situation to get caught up, to get your eyes big, to, you know, want to just blast that ball in, especially with all the attention directed Lucas Zellerion's way. And I think we also don't want to overlook the fact that he could command all the defenders' attention. So Jonathan Mensah could just walk in there and get wide open and then play that absolutely gorgeous ball. But back to Artur, just the poise he shows in calmly, like you said, passing it in there. I mean, just out of reach. And he put, I mean, he has been, I think that's the credit. And that's why I don't have that concern. I mean, I'm concerned, obviously. Seattle's a hell of a team. But the way that these players are executing and the way that they're playing for each other, and to bring it back full circle, I think that was exemplified by Josh Williams after the game. His comments about being a good teammate, about playing for each other. That's what these guys are doing. This sounds corny, but it's true.
Mm-hmm. And you have to have it. You have to have that sort of, especially in a season like this, you got to all be on the same page. You're relying on other people to make good decisions. And we don't know what happened, who exposed whom. We're never going to know that, and I don't want to know that. That's their business. That's their personal health. But it just shows that even if everybody's on the same page, you know, this virus is so hard to understand, and there's more that we don't know than we do know. And to that end, Ori, leading into our preview of MLS Cup with Seattle, the germane question is, are we going to have Elor Room back from the COVID list on Saturday? Did Caleb address that at all?
We don't know yet. I'm sure that, you know, myself or Pat or other members of the media, we will be asking him about those players who were not medically cleared to play for the last 2 weeks against Nashville and New England and their availability for Seattle in the final. Obviously, Aloy Room is the biggest question mark and the player that people are probably the most concerned about and one and are thinking the most about because he's the starting goaltender. And it's going to be a very interesting decision to see whether or not, you know, you bring back Room, the reliable starting keeper you've had for most of the season. But at the same time, Andrew Tarbell has come in first year in Columbus, and he's put in some very, very solid performances and two clean sheets in the last two playoff games, confidence in the back of the net and being vocal to the back line. He's had a hell of a performance for Columbus in 2020. And, you know, I wanted to sort of bring back to when you guys were talking about Williams and Mensah and Artur. I want to bring Nagby into this conversation. Mm-hmm. One word that comes to mind with these guys, dependable. And when I think of when soccer players are dependable, you know, reminds me of the days when I played or, you know, when I watch people play, it's those guys that anytime you know that they have the ball or they're in a one-on-one situation defending, they're either going to get the tackle, you're going to complete your passes, you're going to keep possession, and they have your back. Williams, Mensah, Artur, Nagby always, you know, deliver in that regard. They're getting most of the tackles. They are there for their teammates. They're completing their passes. And, you know, Nagby especially, you know, in those situations where New England just had a counterattack or New England is pressing high and Columbus is, you know, defending a little bit more and they need to get back into space, Nagby's the guy and Artur that's helping to create that space. I mean, some of the movement that Nagby has, you just can't describe that much because he has such a precise touch of the ball. He knows exactly, you know, how much pressure, how much weight he needs to put on those touches to himself, you know, in the midfield to separate yourself from the defenders. And also his change of direction is incredible. And that's something he's been doing well all season long. And, you know, this team has been incredible at home. Their starting guys have been fantastic throughout most of the season. And it all comes down to this, and they've earned the right to play in this final on Saturday and have a chance to be MLS champions, you know, in the final big, big match at this stadium that they've called home for so long now.
And the backstory, you know, we all know the backstory. I mean, this is just perfect. And one of the Soccer Don's favorite children is coming to Columbus to play this team that he did everything he could do to get rid of. I mean, that's perfect. Does anyone know if he's coming? Is he going to fly in for the game?
I think he is, but it's not confirmed nor denied. I saw in the tweets he did his league address today on Zoom this afternoon to a bunch of national media members. The only person I recall seeing a tweet about, a reporter who's covered every single MLS Cup, will not be in Columbus, but nothing on Don Garber specifically. The biggest takeaways from the in terms of like a news standpoint for the league address was RSL's ownership will now be taken over by the league. They're going to find new owners. Ooh. MLS will take that initiative. And also Nashville SC is moving to the Eastern Conference for 2021. They'll probably be an Eastern Conference team forever. I don't know why the hell they put them in the West to begin with.
I don't know, and I like it. I think that's going to be a great rivalry going forward. And they're only 8 hours away, and it's a great town. Just saying, when we could travel again.
Oh, yeah.
It could be, you know, at some point we have to do a massive report field trip, don't we?
Nissan Stadium is really, really nice. I visited there before COVID started this year. It's a really nice stadium. And that atmosphere, if they have full fans, it's a lot of fun. Nashville's a great city.
I love Nashville. It's so cool. So good. That means we get to play them more often. One thing, kind of dovetailing off the COVID discussion, is the fact that these guys in the playoffs have logged a lot of minutes, and it would be nice to have NTN back to maybe take some of the load off of guys like Diaz. Obviously, I guess we just don't know
where not he's yet. At,
right?
Yeah. Right. Not yet.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm not going to worry about it because I have no control over it.
I'm optimistic about some of those guys at the very least. I mean, we don't know about Room, right? But Room was on Instagram posting like photos with the Western Conference trophy with his mask off in the locker room. So he better be good, because if he's not, I'm going to be so pissed.
Wait, did you say the what?
pissed.
Wait, did you say the Western Conference trophy? Eastern. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know they flew both conference trophies to Columbus.
Yes. Typhoid Rube was flown out to Seattle to mingle in the locker room after Seattle.
I was still thinking about that insane game last night.
Oh, ridiculous
game.
It's
still on my mind, I guess.
Unbelievable comeback.
It was, and if you didn't see it, Minnesota scored on a restart from Reynoso in the first half. And then took a 2-0 lead in the second half. It was pretty late in the game before Seattle got a tally. And then it was like a tidal wave coming in from the Pacific out there in the ocean, vampire territory. If you follow the Twilight movies, not far from Seattle, but and I only watched the first half, then I had to hit the rack, but I watched the highlights and Rui Diaz goal to tie the game on the corner kick. I don't know if he was sitting in the stands and then jumped over and ran to the back post so they didn't know he was there. That was like that's one of their best players. They didn't account for him at all.
They didn't mark him. And it cost them a Western Conference title. Oh,
that's just a killer mistake.
I had the exact opposite of you, Brian. I missed the first half and tuned in for the second half. I was playing video games and I was like, I guess I'll switch over. Me and my brother were playing Xbox. And so I was like, I got to put this on. It's 2-1 now, you know, it's getting close. And I put it on and I immediately got like the heebie-jeebies that I got when the Crew would be up by like a very narrow lead during the Berhalter era. And you would see the team like immediately pull off all their attackers and just park the bus and give 90% possession to the other team. You got that feeling like an equalizer was going to be coming. And then as soon as they equalized, you had a feeling where it was like, oh, this is not going to end well for Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And sure, they didn't even make it to extra time. That was the only thing that made me mad.
Yeah.
I was like, you got to put 30 minutes on those legs. Come on, guys. You know, just hang on for a couple more minutes to screw over Seattle. But nope, they couldn't even do that for us. Thanks, Kai Kamara. Thanks, Kai.
Yeah, again. I will point out that Minnesota up 2-0. They sub off Ethan Finley for Kai Kamara, and that look what happens.
Why would they do that? They're not even the same thing.
maybe a bigger presence when you're parking the bus to defend, potentially just a bigger body out there. For things. I don't know.
When have we seen him defend? What
Ryan,
the hell?
The only thing that he defends is his response when he tries to steal penalty kicks. All I can say is
that's ridiculous.
That, you know, they got what they deserved, but not saying that the coach for Minnesota was not in on it, but potentially the fix was in there too. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to head
Don
over
Garber.
To yeah.
Oh, boy.
Don we'll Garber.
Get to,
yeah,
we'll get to the referees here in a minute.
The biggest –
I
was just going to say the biggest thing from that game was the super subs for Seattle. You know, Schmetzer brings on Will Bruin and Svensson in for the second half. Svensson told Seattle media after the game that he had COVID, so he wasn't allowed to start, and he was on the bench this time around, but he was fully recovered. He passed his test. No. He previously had it before. That's why he wasn't available for the Dallas game, but he was able to be with the squad this time around and was ready and fit. But Bruin comes on, scores. Svensson comes on, scores. And then Minnesota decided just not to mark. But an experienced championship team. 4 conference titles in 5 years for Seattle.
I mean, they're good. Go ahead.
The fact that Will Bruin is still a difference maker in Major League Soccer blows my mind because I feel like he's been playing since I was in high school. It's like really weird.
He's 31 years old now, and Svensson is 33. So the old guys got it done, and they're not certainly counted on as goal scorers on this team. And you really have a three-headed monster that you have to account for. Rui Diaz, Jordan Morris, and Nicolas Lodero. Am I oversimplifying this? Or, you know, I mean, you can't let any of them beat you, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those three guys are the three that you look to from an attacking standpoint. But, you know, these guys are champions. They are the premier team in this league. 2 titles. They've made the MLS Cup now 4 years in the last 5. You know, this is, you know, historically speaking in Major League Soccer, one of the best teams, you know, from a collection of players we've ever seen in the league, you know, akin to the early late 90s DC United team.
Yeah, I remember LA, those guys.
You know, the earthquakes of the early 2000s and maybe the LA Galaxy teams, you know, when Beckham and Donovan were kind of getting into those later stages and they were just winning everything. Even the Dynamo in 06 and or 05 and 06, I believe, or 06, 07, they won 2 years in a row. But, you know, these guys are champions. They're a complete team. They got a great manager. You know, they've got leadership in the back line with Stefan Frey in goal. Yamar Gomez has been a good center back for them. And Shane O'Neill, too. He scored the goal against Dallas. And then Joao Paulo and Roldan in the defensive midfield spots. But we'll see the changes that are potentially made. I think Svensson is probably going to start the final this time around. It seems that that's the direction that Schmetzer wants to go for this game. But, you know, we had an interesting piece on themassivereport.com from Andrew Atkins about how Seattle – is the team that Columbus needs to face to make this statement that they are the best to, like you said at the very beginning of the podcast, Brian, to be the best, you have to beat the best. They will literally have to rip the trophy out of Seattle's hands in order to be MLS Cup champions in 2020. So this is the time for Columbus to shine. This is their chance to say, you know what? We're the best team in this league. We almost lost this team 3 years ago. And now 3 years later, we just beat the dynasty of this league over the last 5 years to win a championship.
Bart, this team, the Seattle team, is their window's going to close soon. They got a lot of older players on this roster. And Columbus, you know, if we see a match at home where they have to travel all across the country, we've got a younger squad. This one goes to extra time. You got to like our advantage if – I think NTN's kind of a key player to have at least off the bench on Saturday night. I just think we need a little more depth, and hopefully these guys will be fit and able to give us something, right?
I think so. I don't want to overlook it. I mean, Columbus is, you know, probably a bit younger than the Seattle team, but not much. I mean, this is a Columbus team that, you know, and Caleb Porter has been talking about MLS Cup. And when you look at this roster and you look at the guys and you look at their age, these are all guys that are in their prime. You know, across the board, Mensah, Zelarayan, you know, Santos, you know, maybe a little bit on that other edge, you know, other guys like Nagby. I don't know that they, you know, have a whole lot of better years. This is a great opportunity, and this is where you've got to go and try to take care of this. I think on the plus side, you know, one of the strengths I look at for Columbus here is that depth. And because Seattle, you've seen, obviously, we talked about Lodiero, we talked about Rui Diaz and Jordan Morris. But outside of those three, you haven't seen a whole lot of goal scoring. They really played an oversized role. And I think with Columbus, with you know, bit scoring that you're getting from everyone, when you're getting guys like Artur, who are coming in and scoring goals for you, when you know you've got a Darlington Nagby, who I think he can probably score a goal, you know, maybe able to score one if he gets an opportunity. You know, guys like Milton Valens, Layla, who got goals. I still, believe that you've got a goal coming from one of these center backs. And just how well they're playing defensively, and that comes back to, I mean, they're playing as well over these last two games as they've played as they were playing during that historic stretch at the beginning of the season. Jonathan Mensah, 10 clearances against New England. 10 clearances. You've got just Harrison Offal, who's, again, obviously he's going to make a couple, you know, plays that leave you scratching your head, but he still gets you 3-4 interceptions a game. Darlington Nagby, 4 interceptions, 3 clearances against New England. Just the work and the effort that they put in on the defensive side of the ball and in their half, I think, is what's going to make the difference against the Seattle team. And yes, they've got Frey and they've got a team that's been there before, but I think there's just there's something else to be said about this Columbus squad.
Alex, an X factor is the fact that Caleb Porter coached Portland Timbers, and we'll get to his ultimate moment at the helm of that team here in a few minutes, if we want to remember that. But you have him, you have Nagby, who had a lot of important matches against Seattle. And that's a bitter rivalry out there. But that knowledge has to come in handy on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how the team in general responds. This team seems to want this as bad as the fans want it. And, you know, I'm sure that the Sounders want this as well, but there's all this other kind of outside of the pitch stuff that's tied up in the Columbus story at this point with Save the Crew and kind of the bounce back, the fact that this is the end of the line from Moffray Stadium. And, you know, there's just all these other kind of elements to things that, you know, will really kind of amp up these guys, you know, even the guys who didn't play for Portland. But I do think that Porter is going to be very familiar with this squad and you know, how to kind of go at them if we need to. But I don't think that any of the players, whether they played for Portland or not, will have any issue kind of getting hyped up for this match. The cup needs to stay in Columbus. I think everybody understands what it's going to mean to our city if they win this thing. Seattle, defending champs, they have a lot of people who've kind of been there, done that. You know, maybe traveling cross country in the middle of a pandemic is not, you know, what all these guys really want to be doing. Who knows? You know, I know they get a nice bonus check if they win, but kind of what all of the different emotions wrapped up in this thing for the Crew, I don't know. But you really seem to get the feeling from the players that, you know, they want this for the city. And I don't think the Sounders can say the same thing.
Corey, oftentimes we talk about how Columbus Crew will attack another team. Perhaps we don't spend enough time talking about how an opponent would look to break us down. What do you think Seattle will do to take advantage of what they perceive as weaknesses on our side?
So the two things that come to mind after seeing the way they played against Minnesota, I recall many attacks where they utilized their speed quite a bit. You know, Morris is a fast guy. He's a fast player. So I think they're going to potentially try and take advantage of the speed that they have in their attacking front. And they're very good passing the ball and getting shots in different areas of the pitch. They excelled at that as well. But the one thing that the Crew has to do, defend set pieces, because even though it hasn't killed them in big games this season, you can't let it happen to you in the biggest game of the season and in the biggest game of most of these players have ever played in their careers. So they've got to make sure that they defend a set piece well, because an experienced team like Seattle, who, you know, can get a set piece up there and potentially have some aerial threats as well or get some outside shots. I mean, we saw what happened with Rui Diaz in the Minnesota game. They'll take those chances. They will score on those chances. And you cannot let a set piece decide MLS Cup. You need to have the full on-pitch action, no dead ball situations. That's how you need to determine this game. And for the Columbus Crew, that's how they've been winning games this season, outside of dead ball situations with their possession, with their defending, and with their finishes in key situations, and just being a team that just plays good football and attacks in different situations. They play fast as well. And for the Columbus Crew as a club in general, the way Seattle plays, the way Seattle has succeeded, this is what the Crew are aspiring to be. And this year is a great start and stepping stone, win or lose, for Columbus to sort of get to a track where the Crew can finally, you know, have a team that is always competing for MLS Cup every single season. Because I'm kind of curious from you guys, since you kind of have been following the team more than I have, and you've known sort of the early aspirations and the early seasons, but has there really been a period of 5, 6, 7 years where Columbus Crew has really been competitive to win MLS Cup in their franchise's history?
Well, I think we are always in somebody's shadow. As you mentioned, DC United, that was our albatross in the early days, and there was only 10 teams in the league. And it seems that we just couldn't get past them. And I would agree. We haven't been able to sustain success. It's been blips and blops here. And most of the time, this team has been competitive in terms of making the playoffs and, you know, having a winning record and doing okay. But you're right. I mean, this league hasn't really seen many clubs like Seattle And certainly not in this modern era when you have so many teams. It's hard to stay there. They've been able to do it. It's hard to stay there because this league's mantra is parity. Yeah. They don't want too many SC Cincinnati's. They got one. Yeah. That's probably all they want. And we've seen some clubs struggle. So it's hard to get there, but I think we have the right team in place. You know, we have Tim Bespachenko, who lifted Toronto to some heights and had a good club built there. So I think the right team is in place. The new stadium is coming. And this, I agree, is going to be a launching point. And to your points about the game, I really think that I agree 100%. We need to win this game in the run of play. And we cannot allow Seattle to have too many dead ball situations. And if we do, we have to defend them well. And, Alex, we can't let the third team in the field beat us. The four officials. And it just so happens, ironically, I don't know if they draw, as I mentioned, maybe they draw the names from a hat. I don't know. Why did we end up with the same crew as the 2015 MLS Cup that blew the worst? I've been to many youth soccer games. When you hand a parent the flag and go, you know, just call who gets the throw in. I've seen, you know, 50-year-old parents do a much better job than I saw that day in 2015 in December at Mapfre Stadium. That was a disgrace. Those guys should have been run out of the league, and I understand they will be employed to officiate MLS Cup on Saturday. How does this happen?
So it's not official yet, which makes it even more – to me, that makes it, like, even more shady that, like, somebody leaked it, right? So the person who reported it was sent a screenshot of the referee assignment and was like, hey, check this out. And that's what we're going off of. But, you know, if that turns out to be true, and I hope if you're a crew fan, like, go on Twitter and make a bunch of noise about this. And hopefully we can pull a save the crew and shame the league into not stealing this crap from us. But it is a weird assignment, and I'm still mad about last MLS Cup because, you know, as someone who was, like, right in line with that, the ball was completely out with green in between, right? I mean, it's not like it just barely inched over the line. There was space. You could have
walked 2 or 3 feet
between the ball and the line.
2 or 3 feet, right? Yeah. I was in Dorandek that day too, and I just stood there. My jaw was on the ground. Yeah. I probably spilled my beer everywhere, Bart, which is a disgrace. I could not believe what I saw.
Oh.
And the fact that they let play continue, no one is ever going to be able to explain that to me.
I mean, yeah, that and Jair Marufo, you know, he's got a long list of wrongs against Columbus, you know, notably back, what, in, I think, 2009, that game where he awarded the red jersey. Card and then, yeah, the jerseys. Yep, had to go in.
Hold on here. What was the story again?
He basically got yelled at by Cuauhtemoc Blanco. He got talked out of a red card and then awarded one to us. I'm still... I'll try to bring it up, but then regardless, there was a bull BS penalty awarded to a crew, end up losing, and then they find Jair Marufo trading jerseys and getting Cuauhtemoc Blanco's jersey after the game, that alone should, you know, probably disqualify you, get you kicked out of professional refereeing.
So he gave his referee shirt to a player?
No. He got it from Blanco because he was a fanboy of Blanco.
Oh my God. And I don't remember this.
And so and then instead, you know, Blanco is gone Blanco went on to be a mayor and then may or may not have been involved in a murder of a journalist.
What?
Hiring, that's true. Look it up.
You do a whole other podcast about that.
On the other hand, went on to notably also ref that 2015 game, but also was an MLS representative for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. So that's, this guy has failed up like nonstop.
Which games did he ref in Russia?
I do not recall, but we could probably look that up and yeah, find that out.
How do you spell his name?
Marrufo, I believe.
Something like that.
I found
Alex. We're not saying that the Russian mafia is involved in this, are we? I mean, we're not going Brian, down that rabbit hole.
No, Brian. All I'm saying is that creating a GoFundMe so that we can counter whatever offer has been presented to him might make sense for Crew fans. I don't know if we can raise like, you know, five figures by this weekend, but that might be what it takes. But in all seriousness, well, not in all seriousness, I'm still kind of joking, but there was a tweet from Jonathan Tannenwald where he was quoting Garber on the press call or whatever that happened earlier today, and Garber said, "I am very excited about Columbus. I know some people might think that's not true." So why are you excited, Garber? Why are you excited, Don? You know something that we don't know, Don? Yes.
All I'll say is we've just got to be careful, though, like, because I feel like this is a monkey pod deal if we get rid of Iron Marufo. But it's like that guy that, you know, you put forward and nominate because you know everyone hates them and they'll expend all their energy just getting mad about that. And then you get the person you really wanted, and that is Ted Uncle.
My God. My God. Yeah.
Don't say that. Bite your tongue. I'm not going to think about the officials anymore after tonight. It's just, they drive me nuts. I just hope, you know, I feel like during the playoffs, we've seen mostly good officiating.
Yeah, there hasn't been anything controversial. There was a couple VAR calls in the Western Conference final, but the referee of the year in MLS was reffing that game, and he made those calls correctly. And remember his name. I do want to get his name because I think it's important. Since Caleb Porter also shouted this guy out when he officiated Crew games and said, this guy is the best referee in MLS. And I
want to, you just don't want him to ruin the game. That's all. Just, you know, just keep guys from killing each other and then stay out of the way and try to call balls when they're out of bounds. I'm never going to get over that. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
We are owed one out of bounds ball. When we are on a big counterattack, they need to let it go. Keep your whistle out of your mouth and let it go. We are owed that. That stupid final, I have never forgotten it. I never will forget it. I've honestly spent more time thinking about that Portland final than I have the Seattle final. Like, I'm like traumatized by that stupid match, right? But I got tickets to the final. I was one of the 1,500 fans who was able to get tickets to the final. So I will,
good for you.
I will be there. And I will be there in a mask, risking coronavirus infection to watch this team play. And that makes the tension like even higher, because now it's like I'm putting my physical safety on the line to maybe watch the team lose. So please don't lose, Crew. I don't want to spend 2 hours in an N95 for nothing.
Well, Alex, I salute you. That's great. So
name of the ref, just wanted to point that out.
What's that?
Ismael Elfoth is the name of the ref. Yeah. He was the MLS referee of the year.
Well, then he should be working this match. That doesn't make any sense.
And they just had him work yesterday for the Western Conference final.
That's fine. That's fine. You know, give him some Gatorade and get him back out there. It's fine. If he's the best referee, he should be working the match.
Yeah, he should earn the right to be the ref for MLS Cup final. That just makes sense.
That's stupid. So many things I love the Crew, but so many things this league does just blow my mind. The stupidity, the Don Garberness of it all. It's just got this layer of Don Garber all over it. And, you know, it's time for him to go. He needs something new.
He did such great work at NFL Europe. The only thing on his resume prior to becoming commissioner of MLS.
The best thing with NFL Europe was when you played the old Maddens. And you would just pick your favorite team and go up against like the Amsterdam Admirals and whip them 150-0 on like beginner. Because I remember the NFL Europe teams back in the days when it was like Madden 06 and 07 when they included those teams. And you always
back in the days, Brian.
Yeah. Back in the olden days, yeah.
When Madden was good.
Yeah.
Major League Soccer really is the NFL Europe of world football. But that's okay. Yes. We love it anyway.
Just change the name to MLS Europe.
Well, I bet fans in Europe, when they go and boot up FIFA, they put it on beginner and they pick like Minnesota United and just,
probably not
like 12-0
because MLS is in the back end of the selection because it's under United States, which is like the last country in alphabetical. Oh. The teams that people pick to whoop on in FIFA, sad to say, are like India and Bolivia and probably teams in like the Saudi league or in like the second division of Poland or the Romanian league or something.
Well, they do have a lot more options.
Hey, let me ask you this. I don't know if anybody knows this. I feel like Bart would know this. Do people, because you can bet on anything in England, do people bet on MLS in England? Can I walk up to Ladbrokes and lay down a wager on MLS Cup?
I would not put that past the degenerates of England. I think, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, are they like, you know, self-hating enough to like, I mean, I think MLS Cup definitely, but just like just a random MLS game. Like, why would you put yourself through that? Yeah, but they do. They bet on everything. I mean, every team is sponsored by a betting, you know, company too.
What a great edge we would have if we went to England or Ireland and just started betting MLS games and nobody would know anything about those. We'd clean up.
Oh, yeah, because if there's anything that's a sure bet, it's an MLS game on any given night.
Yeah, you got to
play. I mean, look at Columbus. Look at Columbus, a team that, you know, will get historically great defensively for that run. You know, one of the best teams, and their only loss at home.
Like to Montreal.
Garbage Montreal team.
Yeah.
Off of VAR calls, essentially. Yeah. They didn't play well that game, but yeah, there was some bad officiating in that one.
We're scuttling the plan to go to the UK and bet on MLS games and make millions. I guess
the betting lines now are even.
Yeah,
it's even.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Like, what's the over under?
I don't know the over under.
Look that up while we talk about MLS is going to announce the top 25 of 25 years this week. This league does have history. I mean, let's have some respect here. And there are some Crew players on the list, including a current Crew player, Darlington Nagbe. How many guys are nominated? I mean,
like 200.
Oh, so I mean, let's go over the list here. I'll name them, and we all love them. You just tell me whether they think they're going to get in. We're going to go around the room real quick. Brian McBride, Ori?
I think so. I think Brian McBride is one of the best the best striker the Crew maybe have ever had. Unbelievable player. I loved Brian McBride growing up, and I remember seeing him when I was a kid at Montfrey Stadium or the Columbus Crew Stadium when it was named. I would think that Brian McBride would get named to the 25 greatest players in this league's history. So, yes, Brian McBride.
Anybody disagree? He was a hero of the 2002 World Cup. Nope.
I think when you – and I know this is supposed to be about their MLS careers, but this is MLS and they can't help but glam on to anything else that is good and prominent. That's why I think you're going to probably have some washed-up European, you know, prominent European – like, Pirlo's going to be on this list. Like,
maybe not Pirlo, no, but
I know, but
yeah. – Beckham Henri is a different discussion.
Yeah, exactly. But I think because of, you know, not only what he did in Columbus – but add that goal and then add that career at Fulham. I think there's no doubt with Brian.
He's a nice guy, and he had a bar named after him at Fulham's stadium. And he's just so humble. And, I mean, that guy was a gamer. He got his face bashed in twice.
Oh,
had to go on blood thinners because of blood clots. He has plates in his face. Yeah. You should see his feet. He showed me his feet once. They're appalling. They're so gross because he wore his, you know, like a lot of guys, he wore those boots so tight. And it's just like foot binding. It's like, you're put your shoes back on, man. Those are disgusting. I mean, he gave it all for club and country. He has to be on the list. Frankie Haydock, one of my favorite people. I could tell you stories about Frankie. We don't have time now. But just the amount of beer he could drink and yet run up and down the sidelines for 90 minutes, not only for Columbus Crew, but also USA. He's got to be on this top 25 of all time, right?
Yes.
He's like a mutant.
He's the icon. He's the icon of the club.
Yes. He's like,
and one of the best defenders in league history.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And not just for Columbus. I mean, won cups elsewhere, too. Didn't he win one in San Jose?
San Jose or L.A.?
Yeah.
I can check.
L.A.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, you went to San Jose afterwards.
L.A. in 2010, 2011?
I'll tell you what.
2011.
When David Beckham wanted to hang out with dudes on the beach when he played for Galaxy, he called up Frankie Haydock and he called up Kyle Martino. And Kyle Martino brought his guitar and they built a fire on the beach. He knew who to hang with. So, you know, have David Beckham, you know, give him a check mark and let's get this done. Frankie Haydock has to be on the list. Scalotto, who we love, was just let go by LA Galaxy as their manager, a hero of 2008. That's where it gets a little dicey, though. We're talking 25 out of 200 guys. And the bias against Columbus, he's probably not going to get in, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't
it
know
if he has.
Depends
on how they structure this list.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he has a full enough picture to be in the list. That's the thing. Like, he had one unbelievable season and a couple other good seasons. But I don't know if it's 25 best ever.
I
wonder what the audience is for this list, right? I mean, if we're talking about fair. This is for Crew fans, then that's a very different list than if the target audience for this are fans overseas or something like that. I mean, my fear with this list from the way it's been described is that you're going to get like a bunch of the DPs from Atlanta United and a bunch of the DPs from New York Red Bulls and a bunch of the DPs from LA Galaxy.
I get it. But if Henry's on this list, no, he was terrible in this league. What did he do?
I'm trying to think of all of the DPs that would be on the list. So you're the people who are definitely on it, Beckham, Robbie Keane, Thierry Henry.
Would you put Giovinco in there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Giovinco's on there.
Donovan is the must.
Zoltan.
Donovan's on there. I don't think Zoltan would be on there because he talked crap about MLS like the second he left, and so he's probably on Don Garber's naughty list
for hurting
the reputation of the team overseas.
You know how I feel.
I'm looking at the forwards. The other ones that pop out are like Clint Mathis, maybe. Not Rooney. Twellman?
Dos Santos. You can see them putting Dos Santos on there for no reason. Marquez.
Wondolowski. Wondolowski will be on there.
Wondolowski's on there.
So,
You got Parks is on there for sure.
He's a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Preki, I think, will probably make it.
Valderrama's probably on there for no apparent reason.
Yeah, well,
just because he looks distinctive.
And he played like two seasons.
Yeah,
I got a great Valderrama story. Tampa Bay and Columbus Crew. This was like 20 years ago, and like early in the match, John Harkes is getting under his skin, and I have a really good seat for this. And Valderrama turns around and spits in John Harkes' face, right in front of the center ref. I've never seen a red card come out faster. And, you know, it was not a violent thing, obviously, but he spit right in his face. And Harkes just laughed at him as he got sent off early in the game. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It was so funny. So they should both be on the list. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chad Marshall.
I think he's probably not, but he's one of the ones that I can think of potentially being up in the air. I mean, from the other defenders that are on the list, the most notable ones that I see are, I mean, you guys can just shout out some names if you can think of any. I mean, would they put Lalas on the list, for example?
Alexi Lalas?
Maybe.
I hope not.
Again, to try to make him seem like he's, you know, legitimate, because every time he's undermining that point, anytime he opens his mouth or types something, hit send on Twitter. So you've got to like remind people, actually, he was a really great player though.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't
he used to be so cool.
Shouldn't MLS then, if they're going to give Lalas this honor, shouldn't they balance it with a media partner from another outlet and give, you know, for balancing off jerk-offs, give one to ESPN's Taylor Twellman, as you mentioned, give one to him, give one to Lalas, and then you have balance there. And we have
not Taylor Twellman, give it to Alejandro Moreno.
Yeah, you see, there you go.
Let's see if Moreno's nominated.
I doubt he is.
No, he's not.
But he's our guy.
I mean,
Parker
Taylor Twellman nominated, because that makes me so mad.
Twellman's in the list.
Goodness.
Yeah, who are the other crew? So you got like Jeff Cunningham, Stern John.
No.
Parker's getting in.
Can we argue about Stern John a little bit, though? Because there was not somewhat, like, I mean, I understand. I don't know. I guess the argument is it like, you know, production over a certain, you know, a career? Or is it how dominant of a player were you in MLS? And, I mean, Stern John, 44 goals in, what, 50-some-odd games? I mean, that guy was a monster. He was prolific.
Yeah. Prolific. You know.
And that's like the argument for Guillermo, too. I mean, during his time, he was so dominant, and he won an MVP.
But you have Cunningham, who had the record, the goal-scoring record, for a while. And I will bet money that Cunningham doesn't even make the list because of the way they're going to structure this thing. What this is really going to boil down to is the 25 most famous people who ever played in Major League Soccer and who didn't suck. Like that. Well, those are the two criteria that you have to meet. You're famous and you didn't suck. Like that's
don't
it.
You have to put Brad Friedel on the list? I mean,
yes, Brad Friedel needs to be one of the keepers.
His coaching career is, you know, it didn't go well, but – I mean, you look at his goalkeeping career, and again, you know, he went overseas and was successful. U.S. national team. There. Yeah. I mean, he has to be.
Has to be on there, Brad Friedel. The one name I saw that's nominated that will be very interesting to see if they put him on the list. I don't think he should be, but I'm curious what you guys think. Freddie Adu.
That's a tough one. So, you know, that poor kid, you know, he was put in a position he never should have been put in. It was a sin what they did to this guy. He was 14 years old, and they put all of this weight, this expectation on his head, and it ruined him. He was
a photo shoot with Pelé, for crying out loud, when he was a teenager.
It was appalling. It made me sick the whole time. I felt terrible for him the whole time. There was no way he was ever going to measure up to what they were telling him. And I know that LeBron James got the same crap, but LeBron James is our once in several generations. Mm-hmm. I mean, that he was able to handle that kind of pressure. I went to a full arena at the Schottenstein Center when he was in high school and watched him play for his high school team. And it struck me as bizarre. But he was able to handle it. That was, in a soccer sense, that was the pressure that was put on Freddie Adu. And no kid should have to go through that. It was terrible.
I want to push back on Friedel. I don't think Friedel will make it.
So, I mean, I'm assuming they'd put three keepers. So which three keepers are you thinking?
I think it's Nick Raimondo's number one for sure, without a doubt. I think number two, you're probably looking at Robles. And number three is Tim Howard. Tim Howard is going to be on the list, even though he played like three seasons.
I mean, if we're talking about MLS, though, his best years were overseas.
What about Tony Meola?
Wow, that goes.
That's a good one.
That's so long. Meola's that guy one. Is so old, I barely remember.
I mean, the thing that's so crazy about MLS, and this is something that is crazy, there were like five keepers that were in the league for like the first 20 years of its existence. You know, they had like the original five keepers. It was like Meola, like John Bush. You had Raimondo in there. And I can't remember some of the other ones. Joe Cannon, maybe.
I watched Tony Meola in the 1990 World Cup, where I had to go to a bar in Seattle. I had to call several bars before I found one that, oh yeah, we got it on TV. That was the only way I could watch the World Cup. I mean, you guys have no idea. You young men have no idea how good you have it.
And now MLS Cup is on Fox. There's not going to be any streaming issues whatsoever.
No, that thing, no, it's great.
Yeah.
The beautiful game is available for everyone. Well, I'm sure that no matter what, we'll be unhappy with the list. Brian McBride is the only mortal lock to get on it.
I think Hayek is another one.
Yeah, I feel a little less confident about that. But definitely, I mean, it has to be Brian McBride. What's this note from Bart? Or who was it? Will Trapp is headed to Minnesota. Who put that up?
I put that in early on. I saw an Athletic report after Don Garber had his State of the League address, and they were discussing some moves. And it seems that the Athletic is reporting that Will Trapp might be on the move to Minnesota United after spending one season at Inter Miami.
Well, why didn't he fit in there? I didn't see a lot of their games, so I don't know.
I don't know, but I think
he didn't. Yeah, he didn't get. I mean, what they went? They went and bought Matuidi in the summer, and I mean, you're paying him all that money, you know, Champions League player, in that holding midfield position. So I thought, look, Minnesota just again putting the island of misfit toys. You know, all the former Columbus players adding another one.
Ethan Finley is the general manager of Minnesota United. That's what I'm figuring out. Like he's handling all the transfers. He's Eric Gehrig's gonna come out of retirement and play for Minnesota United. He's gonna get like the entire 2012 crew back together with the.
Yeah, and we were sitting there in that second half thinking that it would be, you know, beat Minnesota week for the Columbus crew, but then Seattle just pulled away the comeback, and you know. It's going to be a good week to celebrate MLS and to celebrate the crew and the Sounders and, you know, to close the book on the most chaotic, toughest MLS season ever. And, you know, the fact that the crew are able to host this game, you know, they were put into the fortunate position, you know, from the help of the guys that they beat to get to MLS Cup. Nashville for beating Toronto and New England for beating Philadelphia and Orlando. So, you know, the fact that crew's hosting at Monterey Stadium on Saturday, no longer now an entree after the appetizer of the Ohio State Michigan football game. Now the sole big sporting event happening in Columbus, good Ohio morning. On Saturday. But you know, it's going to be a great game and it should be incredibly exciting. And the fact that the betting odds are even, I don't speak gambling, but what I see here on DraftKings is Columbus Crew plus 155, Tie plus 235 and Sounders plus 165. So if you guys know what that means, then there you go.
Well, you're getting a bit of juice to bet on the crew. That's what it means. I may have to drive to Wheeling with my laptop on Saturday afternoon to put down a little action because you can bet there. You can bet there. It's coming here. I mean, it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. All right. Well, the only thing left is we got to make our picks, and then we'll sit and watch. And I wish we could all be together. Kudos for you, Alex, for being there. I know, Ori, you'll be there covering. Bart, you'll be at home?
Yeah, I'd most likely be at home.
Me too. I have a press pass. I could have used that to figure out my way in, but my wife wants to watch the game too, and I want to watch it with her. So we're going to watch it at home together. So, you know,
that's fair.
We'll live vicariously through Alex and Ori. Fair enough? All right.
I'll make sure to harass the referee through my N95 for all of you.
Please do.
Shout as loud as I can through multiple layers of filtration. So
not for me. I'll make sure. I'll be sitting in a no cheering area. I have no dog in this fight when I'm sitting in the press.
Right. Seat. I get it. Sometimes I forget and wear a jersey and go into the press box to get a Diet Pepsi or a cookie. I get a funny look. But, you know, that's just the way I roll. Yeah. Okay, Ori, I'll let you make the sober pick tonight.
Ooh.
Always.
I have no idea. Like, this is one of these games where it's just I have no clue what's going to happen. But here's where I'm in the tough position. You know, obviously being from here, you know, and even though I don't have a dog in the fight in the press area, my heart says Columbus, but my head is saying Seattle, and Alex is pointing at me like, don't do it. So this is where things get tough. But
listen, listen, Ori, it was great. It was great working on the podcast with you. I wish you nothing but the best.
I haven't made the pick yet. I haven't made my pick yet.
Just let him make the pick.
I'm just explaining my psyche.
Yeah, just let him make the pick.
And I think because of the fact that the Columbus Crew is at home and have been riding this incredible record at Mopfrey Stadium, and they are determined to win this game and win this trophy, I think they will. And I think the only way that this MLS season ends is in a penalty shootout. I think the Crew win on penalties, and Columbus fans will be, and Seattle fans will have the most agonizing time watching this game. The nerves will go nuts. And I'm going to go out of the box and say that it's 2-2 after 120 minutes with each team scoring an extra time. I am going for an out there, incredible, incredible, entertaining game of football that ends with the Columbus Crew winning their second MLS Cup and their first in front of their home fans in the capital of Ohio.
All right, Ori, I'm right along with you, kind of, in that I also see it going to penalties, but I'm going to say 1-1 after regular time and extra time. I think that this is going to be a more defensive game because I think we're going to, at home, dictate that. It's going to be a little bit more trouble than Seattle is used to as far as, you know, their flashiness and their scoring prowess. And I think the Crew win it in penalties. We'll save Bart for the end. Alex?
I'm just getting nervous just even thinking about your picks and trying to imagine how much I'm going to be hyperventilating while wearing like a mask that does not really let that much air in or out, trying to, you know, survive extra time in MLS Cup. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the Crew are going to get the job done. Seattle are a very good team, but defensively, I think they're a little bit suspect. I think you saw that in the Minnesota game. I think that the Crew have one of the best attacking trios in the country. I think that it's one of the best attacking trios in the history of Major League Soccer, honestly. I think we are an incredibly strong team offensively, and I think we're going to really exploit that team from Washington. So I'm predicting a 3-1 win for the Crew. I think they're going to score early. I don't think that Seattle's really going to, you know, be able to do much. I do think they're going to get a goal on a set piece, but I think Crew are going to dominate possession, dominate the game. I think there's going to be a celebratory atmosphere in Columbus by halftime. I think we're going to get it done. This team is just too good.
Okay. All right. Bart, top that.
I don't know if I'm going to top it because a 3-1 is my Crew MLS Cup, you know, final pick. It's just, it's the right score line. It's worked for us so far. I'm going to stick with it.
Okay.
I think Columbus gets the 3-1 win. I think I would like to think that it is settled by halftime, but I think it's tied at one at halftime. Again, I think Crew's just sort of been, you know, struggling to score early. I think Seattle probably gets one, and then Columbus gets one before the, you know, end of the half, and then I'm debating whether it's the go-ahead or if it's, you know, the dagger goal, but I think Lucho Diaz is getting one in this game. He, I mean, how well and how much he has stepped up in these last few games. I think he's, and we've seen him take some just stupid shots, but he can blast the hell out of the ball, and I think he just scores a golazo to put Crew ahead, and then the dagger from the Angel Eye, from Angel Eyes, Josh Williams. I think off the set piece.
If Josh Williams finally scores this 2020 goal that Bart's been saying has been going to happen for the course of 9 to 10 months, that would be insane.
Oh. It's going to be a bicycle kick, too.
Yes.
All right. No, I am driving to Wheeling now with my laptop. Put down that prop bet that Josh Williams scores on a bicycle kick. I love it.
Harrison Offal bicycle kick clearances are your guarantees for bicycle
yeah.
kicks.
Yeah.
Two of those against New England.
And I love it every time I see it. I don't care. I mean, no one's impressed by him anymore. And not just – it's just people have seen enough of him in terms of bicycle kicks that nobody gets excited. But I'm still a kid at heart.
Oh, yeah.
I still get excited about a bicycle kick. All right. Well, we'll see. I wish we could all be there together, but the next best thing is that we will, just hang out on Twitter at Massive Report, and we'll fire off on the officials. I'm sure Alex will, in person, and we'll reassemble next week to see how we did. Breathe. Yeah, we need this. It gives us life, right?
Brian, I've got just one quick question before we sign off. Is there a limit on the number of times you guys can play a song during the Andy Manathon this weekend if people request one?
No, if you buy it, and thank you for bringing that up. Thank you. Mm-hmm. During all this madness, we are also doing the Andy Manathon this weekend. Starts at 7 p.m. on 92.9 FM, which, I'm still getting used to. Moving down the dial, as the King said. But we're taking your pledge requests for CD 92.9 for the kids. It all goes to Central Ohio Children's Charities. You call up, you buy a song, and we play it. So obviously you have a song in mind.
I mean, there's just this one song that Columbus Crew fans seem to hold in high regard. It's a tune you may have heard it before. Africa by the band Toto.
Yeah, well, we do play the Weezer version, but, if you pay enough, we'll play the Toto version.
That's Sam's signal to put a copyright song at the end of the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair use if he just plays a little bit of it.
Yeah, like 2 seconds.
Everyone, crew fans, it would be sure, yes. No one would. I want to be able to tune in at any point to 92.9, any point over the weekend and know that I'm going to hear Africa by Toto.
That is our Massive Report challenge. It's right there, and all the songs that we sing at the matches, but certainly Africa by Toto. Just let your imagination run wild. If there's a song that,
that all you of them, you dear play to Wise heart, Men or not Wise yeah. Men, the Falling in Love with You, Elvis.
Yeah,
think of all the it's all the Nordic songs.
Request all of them. It.
I donated it. Earlier today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing that.
We'll get at least one Africa by Toto.
Okay, just go to cd929fm.com/thon, not thong, Alex, thon, T-H-O-N.
Why me? Why?
Yeah, I don't know. You're the silly one. You're the silly one. Just picked you out of the crowd. Just make a pledge request, please, and help the kids. Thank you. That's all I'm saying. All right, we got to get out of here. I got some show prep to do. Listen to my morning show. I'm Brian, CD929. There, I'm getting it. Alex, Bart, Ori, love you guys. Thank you so much. Let's go get this done, and we'll reassemble
go
next
crew.
Week. Go, crew.